I get it. Hey. Okay, success. Well, with that, I think we should probably go ahead and get started. I imagine there'll be a few stragglers along, but it's already about 5 after, so I think just long enough to wait for the latecomers. And so, with that said, Craig, you want to officially call the roll and see who's here?
Okay, well, why don't I read out what I know so far, and then if there's somebody else I don't have, then you can let me know. Ken Freeland, Craig McKee, Barry Zwicker, Les Jamieson, Dwayne Dietz, and Pat McGuire. Is there anybody else? I guess that's it.
Yeah, it's not either there. They got their phone on mute. Okay, so with that said, then the minutes from the previous meeting that's circulated by Craig, are there any amendments to those minutes? Hearing none, then we'll take them for approved. And tonight's agenda is pretty wide open, except that we did agree to check back with folks if there was anything else they wanted to add about the discussion of new parameters for the group's discussion ambit. So that would be the only thing that we need to get on for sure. I know Les has some updating for us on one of the topics that we always review. And if Barbara shows up, as she said she was going to try to do at some point, she has some updates for us too. So let's move along then. And does anybody wish to add anything to the discussion last week? We did identify several parameters of discussions that we thought would be useful to keep as guidelines. But if anybody has anything to add to that or to discuss about that, this is a good time to do that before we move on to other issues. Anybody have any further thoughts?
Not new ones, Barry here, not new ones, just the new parameters are very, very much food for thought, and I'm interested in especially in 2 or 3 of them.
Okay. Well, sounds like then we did a more complete job last week than we might have thought. So I guess we can just let that go, and unless anybody else wants to bring it up at a future time, which of course anybody can do at any point by including it on the agenda. And we'll get into, I guess, we should approve the agenda for tonight. That was the first item on the agenda, but are there any other items that anybody would like to include on the agenda before we proceed? Well, hearing none, then I guess I'll ask Les if he would like to give us the update that he has on the HR 14 campaign. Les?
All right. Where do I begin? I guess it would be good to start with the co-sponsors. The list of co-sponsors has increased. Just so everybody knows, a new Congress, new session of Congress, all resolutions have to be reintroduced, and all co-sponsors have to re-sign on, if you can imagine that. So it's kind of laborious, but that's the procedure. So there are now 13 co-sponsors. It was, by the way, reintroduced as of January 6th, and Walter Jones and Steve Lynch got right to it. You know, and it was given the number 14 this time. It was HR 428, now it's HR 14, which I think is an indication of their commitment to the issue of getting the release of these 28 pages. So, again, there's been, let's see, in the month of February, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 more signed on. And we hope that'll continue. That's what we're working for, to get a mass groundswell of people calling, writing their congressperson, meeting with their congressperson to urge them to, number one, read the 28 pages, two, co-sponsor the resolution, and three, work for its passage. The news that came out in early February, starting with, with the death of the Saudi Prince Abdullah, that seemed to bring some attention to the issue of the Saudi royals. Then this was followed by the revelations of Zacharias Moussaoui. He was questioned by lawyers about his knowledge of funding of 9/11 by Saudi royals, and he named names. And of course, everyone on this call is aware of this and read some of the articles, but it was a lead story in the New York Times. It also sparked mainstream coverage of these 28 pages. And I spoke to a staff member, the lead staff member on HR 428, from Walter Jones' office, and he said that after this news came out, Walter Jones was being approached on the House floor by members wanting to know more. So this news that came out just a month ago, I think, was pretty amazing. You know, Huffington Post covered it. The other mainstream sources, CNN, covered it. And then even Democracy Now! Hold your breath, everybody. But Democracy Now! Covered it. I guess they're fine with talking about something that's going on in Congress that, you know, is being already filtered through the official news sources. So it was a big deal, and this is kind of what sparked my interest from the beginning, that should this resolution move forward, that there was a high likelihood of attracting the media spotlight, which is just so necessary to permeate more of the national consciousness about the fact that there is information that's been withheld, a lot of information that's been withheld from the American public and the 9/11 families all these years, and this issue of the 28 redacted pages is just the tip of that iceberg. But it is, nevertheless, a starting point and a catalyst which can lead to a much broader spectrum of questioning of 9/11, of the official narrative and so forth. That's what I see the possibility for. And so that's a little bit of the update there. As far as the press conference on January 7th, you know, that got a lot of coverage as well, I should mention. And Bob Graham was covered in various interviews. By the way, he has been approaching members of the Senate to draft a companion bill that will sort of parallel this House resolution. They were meeting with some openness and some receptivity, although there was kind of work overload, and they were getting answers like, yeah, I'm interested, but I can't handle it right now due to other workload. But that may materialize. So that will be a big deal right there. That will be a big boost to this whole effort. In parallel, also I should kind of report on what a case in a Florida court that's going on where a judge ordered the FBI to turn over documents that it had on this wealthy Saudi couple that was living in Sarasota, and just days before 9/11, in a moment's notice, left the country. They just fled, basically. And the FBI had lied to Bob Graham saying, no, we don't have any information on that. Well, it turns out they did. And this judge ordered the FBI to turn over all the documents. It turns out there's 86,000 documents. So he's going through these documents now, and it'll take a while, but that's something to watch for. In Bob Graham's statement, in the press conference, he says, there has been a pattern of cover-up. Okay? And that given that there was activity going on in various locations here, San Diego, Sarasota, Florida, and other flight schools, and Herndon, Virginia, we need to know what the FBI knew, what the NSA knew, because we strongly feel what will surface is a pattern of outside help and support. Okay, and kind of the angle that they're using, and I say this is an angle, because these people, Bob Graham, Walter Jones, Stephen Lynch, and others, they're fully aware of it. There's a 9/11 truth movement. They're fully aware that there's all the evidence out here of controlled demolitions and stuff. But they're being politicians, and they're going with this effort where they know that they have the cover of 9/11 families, as well as the moral authority, and they're using also the principle of the government must be transparent, and democracy requires it, and that should appeal to all Americans. And thirdly, they're using the rationale that there is no national security risk. That is the reasoning for why these pages were classified. But to the contrary, they are asserting that that withholding what's in those 28 pages is actually jeopardizing national security today, because there is ongoing funding coming from Saudi Arabia and other sources in the Middle East that is going into the bank accounts of extremist groups out there, which there are many, and therefore it is to the interest of the United States and the issues of national security that these pages should be declassified and revealed. Okay, so that's the rationale they're using, which I'll say to everybody on this call, again, this is, I firmly believe, a Trojan horse, a tactic. They're being tactical because there's probably more in there. And according to Thomas Massey, who's a Republican, he's from Kentucky, he says that it caused him, when he read it, he was shaken. He was shocked. He had to stop every few minutes, and it caused him to rethink everything he knew about 9/11. Another quote is that, I think it's Bob Graham, maybe, who said that, from reading of these 28 pages, it became quite clear that 9/11 was in the planning for up to weeks, months, and years. So now our strategy is to move forward to try and get people just to do their civics 101 duty. We have a website, hr14.org, that has a form where people can put in their zip code, and there's a message that will go directly to their their congressperson. So that's all automated. And now we just need to create more awareness. There are a couple of Facebook groups that total, I think, 30 to 40,000 members. I did one posting on one of those groups. I'm going to hit the rest of those groups. Also, Architects and Engineers has been in support of this whole issue, even though, I don't know if everyone knows, their main mission has to do with the physical evidence. They support the effort here of the movement and to lobby for the release of 28 pages because it's action on the political level, finally, that the movement has been striving for, and the Architects and Engineers has been striving for so many years. So finally, it is happening in a certain set of parameters, so we should support it. And so Architects and Engineers has included some news alerts urging people to also learn about the resolution and contact the congressperson. So we're looking to get more participation and also get reports back on what people's experience has been. And it's very important. Now, I'll just close with a couple of thoughts here of why this is, I think, has gotten very urgent. The release of the 28 pages has a very strong potential to just turn the whole official narrative of 9/11 upside down. Also, it will reflect extremely negatively on George W. Bush for classifying his pages in the first place, which, by the way, even members of the 9/11 Commission, such as Keene, Hamilton, John Lehman, and Bob Kerry, are advocating for the release. And so it got urgent for these reasons. Another thing recently in the news that the State Department, the Justice Department is moving ahead with its impending trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and five others in Guantanamo Bay. And the next time, well, I think we have to maybe September before the next issue or the next hearing or court action. But they're moving forward regardless of the fact that the torture was used, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed being waterboarded 183 times. They're still moving forward. And I believe that they are hell-bent on getting a conviction so that they can say, look, we solved the 9/11 crime. We got the culprits. We're heroes. And now we can put it to rest, put it behind us forever. That's what they're after. Releasing these 28 pages and will prevent that. Because it will become clear that the government's been lying and the whole premise is bogus and there's much, much more to the story than we've been told, et cetera, et cetera. And that there's a symbiotic relationship between the Bush family and the Saudis and more. So that's critical. Next compelling reason is Jeb Bush is running for president. He could, I think we could argue that he has a strong, very strong, very, very favorable outcomes that could come out of this just by his name. Favorable outcomes in his interest, of course. and he stands a real good chance of becoming the candidate. So can you imagine another Bush in the White House? So all Democrats, all independents, all libertarians, you know, actually any Republicans with half a brain should rise up and demand that he explain why these pages were classified in the first place and why they've been classified all these years, et cetera, et cetera. He should explain why his brother did it, and what was he trying to protect in terms of the Bush-Saudi relationship. And this has to be exposed. And if he does become president, of course, he'll never release these 20 pages. So that's another compelling point. Let's see. Oh, the Patriot Act is up for renewal in June. And, you know, the release of the 28 pages, you know, the public is aware that this information has been kept secret all these years. You know, the legitimate question has to be asked, which is, well, why are we in this global war on terror? Why do we need the Patriot Act when there's information here that is very, very specific, that is evidence about who the funding, it's partial funding of the 9/11 attack. So why are we in this global war on terror? If this is information that's been had all these years and it hasn't been dealt with, it's not been revealed. So there's a lot of leverage here that we have. And I'll just finish by adding this. Many people in the movement feel that this is a limited hangout and blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, the Saudis really are not the ones, and it's a way to sort of blame some Saudis and then, close the door, so to speak, on the whole question of 9/11. However, I think the fact that there is willingness within Congress to pursue the issues, and it's out in the news now, mainstream news. It's and it has implications for that could basically blow the lid off the phoniness of the global war on terror, the fact that it's an opportunity for people in the grassroots to put some heat to their Congress people and demand action. It's a huge opportunity the topic of the Saudis is just one aspect. There's other classified information, which is testimony by Sybil Edmonds, the testimony by William Rodriguez, that we could demand be released, just based on the fact that Keene and Hamilton said they believe it all should be open, and all should be out there. Now, can you imagine if the Bell Edmonds testimony and Rodriguez testimony gets revealed, gets declassified? So there's a lot of potential here. And we really need to educate as many people as we can. We have calls every Wednesday night at 9 Eastern. If anybody would like to participate, just let me know. My email is artisan3@gmail.com. artisan3@gmail.com. Just let me know. And be happy to add you in on this call. And now there's regional organizing going on throughout the country to put together infrastructure where we can get thousands and thousands of people to join this cause and push it forward. And with that, I ask if there's anybody having any questions.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that update, for that really detailed update, Les. I know that the question, the deeper question about this campaign is going to be remain controversial, but I don't think there's too much controversy about your able leadership. So congratulations on that. Would anybody besides me like to ask questions or make comments on what we've heard? Put you on the stack. Anybody like to be on the stack to address this, any of these questions?
Craig?
Craig? Anybody else? Okay, Craig, and then me. Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question. When you were just talking at the end about the William Rodriguez and Sibel Edmonds stuff that's classified, I wasn't really aware of that. So I was wondering if you could explain what it is that what it is exactly that's classified.
Sure. The 9/11 Commission hearings were happening. They interviewed both Sibel Edmonds and William Rodriguez for, like, I believe it was 3 to 3.5 hours. And in it was like in a private room, you know, in a very secretive. In highly secure scenario. Now, Sibel Edmonds, matter of fact, the Senator or Congressman Chuck Grassley, he was the one that interviewed her. And but he knows what she had to say. And yet after that, what was very interesting, that she was interviewed on various media. She was actually interviewed by Amy Goodman once or twice. And she spoke a little bit about what she knew and what she saw in her work as an FBI translator. However, within a few months, John Ashcroft, the Attorney General, clamped down on her and, like, did a, what's the word, he put a gag order on her in retrospect, so that even though she had already spoken, she could no longer speak in public about what she knew about 9/11. Okay, so that's classified, and then with William Rodriguez, same thing, 3.5 hours in a private room. That was classified. And, to this day. So, he spoke about his whole experience of being in the North Tower and hearing an impact of an explosion prior to the first plane hitting, 175 hitting the North Tower. Et cetera, et cetera. And that's never been released to this day. Now, fast forward to about a year ago on CNN, Jake Tapper did a whole piece about these 28 pages, this resolution. And Tom Keene, right, co-chair of the National Commission, was interviewed, and he was on record saying he believes just like everything should be declassified. You know? And Lee Hamilton said he's embarrassed that these 28 pages were classified. Now, so we just use their words. Now, I don't know if they're grandstanding or, you know, not, or if they're being disingenuous, but these are their words. So what we can do and should do is run with them. Then, hey, according to the Keenan Hamilton, everything should be declassified.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Okay. Let's see, I have a couple of questions to ask you, Les, but before I do, I'd like to ask if there are no objections, that Craig be asked to put in the minutes both the specifics of the link to the website and the fact that there is a opportunity there for people to send an email to their congressman without much trouble. And secondly, your email address, Les, if you have no objection, for people who are interested in becoming part of the conference call. Does anybody object to those things being in the minutes? Okay. My two questions for you, Les, are the first one is about, I think it was Masawa, you said mentioned the funding links to the Saudis. Do we know for a fact that those comments were not extracted by torture, or do we?
Yes, we know that they were not. There was not torture involved.
Thank you. And the second question has to do with, I think it was you were saying, Graham, I'm not sure who you were saying, but you were saying that these people who are promoting this within the House are aware of the demolitions and other aspects of 9/11. Is that correct?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Well, at the press conference, and this is on video, this is one way I know this. There's a gentleman next to me, he's got kind of a little bit of a rabble rouser, his name is, I'll think of it in a second. Anyway, he's a retired customs agent, and he actually was hired to go to the Fresh Kills landfill after 9/11, where Building 7 debris was transported, and he was tasked with going through one of the debris. So at the press conference, he says, "Hi, young. I'm spacing on his name at the moment. I'm a retired agent, customs agent, is there anything in the 28 pages having to do with the evidence of controlled demolition?" Now, imagine that. He just came out with it in the press conference. And the looks on Graham's faces, the three of us, Graham, Walter Jones, and Stephen Lynch, they didn't flinch. There was no stammering, no, feeling of discomfort. Graham just said matter-of-factly, no. So I could see that they are completely aware of it. Otherwise, they would have squirmed and looked like, what are you, crazy? Never heard of that. That's off the wall stuff. No, they didn't give any indication of lack of credence to the question. So I hope that's clear what I'm trying to explain there.
Okay. So you just drew an inference from the response, from their facial gestures and so forth, but you haven't heard them say anything to the effect, right?
No, I haven't heard them say anything. However, I've been in touch with an aide, Walter Jones' aide. He's a guy named Bradley Ryan. He's a staffer, and I had a lengthy conversation with him. And by the way, I gave him a copy of Experts Speak Out, Annihilated Explosive Evidence actually speak out. Also, I got a copy to Bob Graham, and went to Eleanor Cliff, you know, the journalist, Eleanor Cliff. But anyway, this guy, Brad Ryan, he was fully aware of all this evidence, and if he's aware, Jones is aware.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Anybody else like to comment or ask a question? Well, then, I guess we'll thank you again, Les, for your very detailed update, and wish you success, and hope that you'll come back and keep us apprised of developments, okay?
Thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay, so I guess we're at the point of our call where we can entertain any kind of discussion, first of all, on any of the topics that were listed that we normally consider updates on, if anybody has any on any of those topics. I'm sorry Barbara's not here because I know she had several, but I guess she couldn't make it. She said she had a conflict. But if not, then we could just do our usual thing that we do toward the end if we have time, and that is to open up to any matters of pertinence that anybody wishes to discuss.
It's Barry here, and I'd appreciate a little follow-up on, and really almost turning to a global perspective, and it's this subtopic called Gladio B that I see was raised by someone in connection with the new parameters, and that really caught my eye because this presumably has to do, and Ken, you said you thought before others came on the line very early on that maybe James Hufford was the one who mentioned that, is that right?
I thought so, yeah. I'm not really sure, but it seems to me it was James that mentioned that in passing. If anybody can correct me, be sure to do so. I don't recall who it was that first mentioned Gladio as a...
I think you're right. It was James.
Right, and I'd sort of expect that of James, partly because of his age. Like myself, he's longer in the tooth and probably is... quite familiar. I'm not saying that anyone else on this call is not familiar, but he'd be familiar with Operation Gladio, the so-called NATO's Stay Behind armies that for about 20 years in Europe just launched a whole series of false flag operations during the Cold War, and they were all blamed on the left. And that helped to destabilize politics in Europe, especially Italy, and prevent the legitimate democratic coming to power of socialist and even in Italy, communist parties in the immediate post-war, post-Second World War period. So the reason this caught my eye is because I've been rereading that book. And, excuse me, and you may know, the rest of you may be familiar with the fact that this was called the strategy of tension. And the idea was to cause chaos and destabilization and, of course, to scapegoat the chosen targets who would be those who opposed the Cold War and the emerging American Empire of the time. And so it's just my opinion, and it's probably not mine alone, that I've developed in light of this spate of false flag operations, Sydney, Paris, and we had our own in Ottawa in October, and others. And they seem to be just manufacturing these false flag operations almost on an assembly line basis. And that leads me to a sort of a generalized opinion, and I'd be interested to hear anyone who has any thoughts or reactions to this opinion, that what has happened and what is happening is that this same strategy of tension is simply being applied globally. And that you don't know where the next, you know, where the next false flag operation, I'm going to assume, and unless there's evidence otherwise, that a terrorist attack is usually a false flag operation. And there aren't that many terrorists, really. And so that the strategy of tension has been taken globally, and it seems to, again, be very political, because in Canada here, our own Prime Minister, who is clearly to the right of Obama, I mean, I don't think anybody has illusions about Obama, you know, anymore, but Stephen Harper he's really akin to the right-wing Republicans. And I noticed today that Canada is implicated, this was on the Global Research site, I think, Canada is implicated in this coup attempt in Venezuela. There's a Maudi down there, apparently, has been proven. And so it seems that it's a rather alarming global strategy, and the any right-wing government that could benefit from playing the fear card, and that would be our Prime Minister Stephen Harper, is going to be helped by these false flag operations. And well, anyway, that's the gist of the thinking that I've been doing, and I wonder if it stimulates any thoughts among the rest of you.
Would anyone like to respond? Well, I will, Barry. I certainly concur. You know, we talked a little bit or before the call started tonight about this, but certainly the false flag operations in Europe post-war provided the template for the same strategy. And of course, people that have read Sobel Agnew are aware that this exact scenario has been planned as a so-called Gladio B to be transferred from Europe to Central Asia in the same sort of tactics. But as Malcolm X famously said one time, the chickens come home to roost. So it's not surprising that within our own domestic situation, we see these so-called terrorist acts occurring. And the nice part about it is, of course, that the war on terror is not a war on a political position. It's a war against a tactic. And so anyone who is supposedly using this tactic of terror can be considered to be part of the problem and therefore require the same old solution over and over again, which is, of course, the unhindered growth of the warfare state. So, yeah, I agree with you. Anybody else?
Yeah. This is Dwayne.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Dwayne.
Yeah, this is exactly the way we've been viewing things here in San Diego Truth. So, and we are also expanding our charter to include these kinds of things as well. That's all.
Good.
Glad to hear that.
This is Kat.
Go ahead, Kat.
Yeah, just a couple comments. Sobel Edmonds is really quite an expert on Gladio B, and if anyone's interested, on James Corbett's show, The Corbett Report, maybe about a year or so ago, he did a four-part series with Sobel all about Gladio B. I don't know anywhere else where there's so much comprehensive information about it.
Good.
And Sobel also has a new novel out. Since her first book, Classified Woman, she's basically, her whole life is classified, but they can't get her for a novel. And her novel is called The Lone Gladio. And Lone Gladio is very interesting because it takes all the Gladio concepts And she uses that to really say what she thinks is going on, knowing her deep understanding of Gladio and all of the knowledge that she has that she can't talk about. And then my final comment is, I really mostly don't believe any of these terrorist things. I think at least 95% of them are false flags, especially here in this country where Mother Jones did report that they're all concocted and run by the FBI and who knows globally what's going on. But what bothers me is some of my friends just kind of say, oh, you got a hammer and everything's a nail, my knee-jerk reaction. Oh, I didn't believe Charlie. I didn't believe the Boston Marathon. You know, there are terrorists out there. Well, we know proportionally what's going on, but what I find really sort of that I wrestle with is, okay, when are there really terrorists? Not that I find them really dangerous when you consider the gunpowder or the ammunition powder of the West. But I just don't want to be like everything's a terrorist and it's all a false flag, because that's sort of a reductionism. And yet it all seems to me to be. So I was wondering if anyone had ideas. To me, Charlie, was also when you start picking it apart and looking at all the holes, but I just don't want to be this one-dimensional person. And so I was wondering if anyone had comments about that.
Okay.
Well, it's Barry again. I'll jump in if I'm jumping in. I'm well aware, very aware, and sensitive to what you're saying. And I've had similar thoughts, not so much similar reactions, because maybe I'm too much in the circle of people who are 9/11 truthers, although I find it's a very large circle now. I mean, most of my friends and relatives and even acquaintances, they're all either truthers or they don't question, or they're very, very much questioning what's going on in the world. And we know that the trust in the mainstream media has gone down pretty dramatically for the last 20 years. And this is partly because people simply don't believe so many of the stories that they're reading or they're hearing on the radio or seeing on their TV. But within our own circle of people who are, may we say, better informed, it's and Elias Davidson has clarified this, that just as a matter of logic, it's permissible and advisable and reasonable to assume when there's a terror event that it is a false flag until we find evidence to the contrary. We all have assumptions going into anything, and so rather than going into the assumption that the media want us to, we should go the other way. And then when it comes to specifics, it's usually easy, I hate to say this, it's relatively easy to find the anomalies and the absurdities and the impossibilities in each false flag as it comes down the pike. And so Malcolm Gladwell's notion of one thin slice comes in. You don't have to know everything, and you can't, of course, but you don't have to know everything about a given event. If you see one element that is way, way out of whack, and a reasonable person should at that point become skeptical or downright suspicious or even disbelieving. And that seems to apply as they come down the pike.
Yeah, it really does. They keep using the same play script, and I'm like, surely they can't keep doing that over and over again. Surely some of these are real, but I'm not feeling anything real.
Well, Kat, that's a very good point. I do believe that you're making there, because in the world of commerce, there's such a thing as dissolving your brand through overuse, and that's not the exact phrase I'm after, but I think that they're really undermining their brand by overdoing it. And more and more people, as they see that things are fishy, then then the brand suffers. And I just think they're really, really overdoing it.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on this too, that in response to your question, Kat, about where is the real terror, that we have to be very careful to not exclude state sources of terror, because there is state terrorism, okay? And there are many examples of it, both committed by the United States and its allies around the world. Well, that's terrorism, you know? It is, because it's directed against civilian targets and it's done for political purposes.
Good point.
Anybody else?
By the way, are the rest of you getting some sort of a weird echo?
Yeah.
Mostly from you, I think, there, unfortunately. I think we're getting your echo. Well, I guess it's me too. I guess it's all of us, yeah.
This is Dwayne. I'm gonna have to drop off now. If the echo goes away, then it was me.
Well, hang on a second. I'm gonna try something here, see if it helps.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Is the echo stopped?
Nope.
No, it hasn't stopped.
No.
Okay. I thought maybe it was my headset. Okay. Well, you tried. Okay, thanks for joining us anyway, Dwayne.
Yep. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Hey. Bye.
So, would anyone else care to make a comment on this discussion point about Gladio and terrorism?
Well, Barry, again, I would just add, and I'll be very brief, that evidence is beginning to come in of the actual supplying of arms to ISIS, for instance. By U.S. Cargo transports. So this has just come out today, and it seems to be from a reliable source. And we know that back quite a long time ago, these British undercover agents in Baghdad were actually discovered dressed like Arabs on their way to a market with bombs. And they were that was really a noticeable and provable and documented case where a false flag operation was interrupted. The police just stopped them for speeding or not making or for some traffic infraction or something, and that's how they got discovered. Then they were put in jail, and then the British Army went and blew up the whole jail in order to let everybody out to get their guys out. But so there's beginning to be. Solid forensic, circumstantial, eyewitness, video evidence of the actual arming of the enemy. And so it's a friend of mine recently said, it's like John Stockwell's book, which was entitled In Search of Enemies. And I said to her, no, that book title is out of date. It's Creating Your Enemies. And that seems to be the name of the game.
This is Kat. I fully agree. It's becoming more and more obvious. But unfortunately, on another side of that, I'm reading a statistic right now, Russ Baker, who at Y has it, that the use of ground troops has risen from October from 30% to 47%, and the percent of Americans who believe, quote, overwhelming military force is the only answer to terrorism, that jumped from 37% to 47%. So it's like they're winning this fake PR war, and people are getting bought in. I'm sure American Sniper helped add to that, all that predictive programming. It's becoming more and more obvious, and yet it's becoming more and more entrenched that they're going to go that way. So it's just caught between a rock and a hard place, quite a paradox.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You guys, I have to go because we have our 9/11 truth out call. So I'm going to hang out.
Good luck on that.
Bye, Kat.
Bye.
Well, it's 9 o'clock. If nobody has anything pressing, I guess we could call it a night. Does anybody have anything else? Any other discussion point to pursue? Well, hearing none, does anybody have one? No. Okay, so I guess we'll just wrap it up then and say thanks for being here and look forward to the next call. And remember to get your agenda items in early so we can prepare for lengthy discussions on pertinent points. Okay?
Good.
All right.
All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks. Thanks,
yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, good night, everybody.
Good night.